Blog Talk Radio.
Well, that's why I get out of bed in the morning. I don't know about anybody else. That's why I get up out of bed. Just the sound of that, knowing it's at one point in my day, that's why I do. Welcome, people, to She's Raising the Bar on Blog Talk Radio. Lori Towers is me, your humble servant, for the past 10 years. So, as I always say, thank you for joining us. And what's funny is people have been writing in and they're saying, you know, I remember you being on another show. And people are getting a little confused. Let me clarify some things for you. The show is actually on the air for, I think in April it was 10 years in April. I'm correct. And the first 6 years of the show, it was the Bridal Body Shop. And it was a fitness show. We had a business that got brides and grooms in shape for the wedding. So that was the first show, and we had a reality show treatment, as much as I'm against them, we had that. And that was the first 6 years of the show. I should also mention I use the pronoun we. My co-host that was with me for, I'm thinking, 9 years of it and the different transitions from the Bridal Body Shop to She's Raising the Bar was the lovely Lee Ziegelman, who left the show last year. Now, Alex, I want you to sit down for this because I know you can be leveled. I know you can be leveled when I tell you. This woman left me for photography. You hear what I'm
what?
Saying? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's why I said to you, sit down, girl, because this is gonna be something that you need to hear.
Wow.
I'm kidding. You know what? That's what I'm thinking. I said, my God, a lens over me. Huh? I tell you, there was not enough alcohol in the world to cover that wound. That's all I'm saying. I tease. She's a wonderful photographer. In fact, there's a lot of pictures on my Facebook page as well as my website that she took. So, again, all kidding aside, Elite, if you're listening, I love you dearly. Only kidding. She's actually going to be a guest co-host on the show that we always do with Tammy Lee Webb of Buns of Steel fame. We do that in September, usually, to fall into fitness. So she's actually going to be coming on for that. So I'm just being fresh because that's usually how I am. So all kidding aside, but that's the lineage of this show. And the past year was me on my own, and here we are now. But today, I ain't lonely because my special guest co-host for last week, ending at Pride Month with her, is the lovely Alexis Hunter, who is the author of Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For. Welcome again, my darling.
Oh, I'm so happy to be back. I so look forward to this. This is so much fun.
And you wouldn't have left me for a lens, right? Just checking.
Hell no. There's no way. No way. Can't get rid of me.
I was going to say, I just had to just, you know, doing a public poll. I just wanted to know.
if I was going to bail for a lens, there's no way. No.
Yeah. I know that about you.
Today. Yeah. Today and next week, you got me for sure.
There we go. And you know what? You know, again, all kidding aside, and it's not about me. You have a big day tomorrow, a huge day. It's the special edition release of Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For, which is, you know, I love the book, and I've gotten the book for people, for friends of mine that have shown interest. And I think what's the best part of all of this is the fact that it's being re-released on the decade anniversary of marriage equality. And I think that that's just perfectly, perfectly placed. Tell us, I mean, anybody who has the old book, which is wonderful, but I want to encourage people to buy the new one because there's going to be a lot of supplements to it. So tell us a little bit about that.
Lori, I'm so excited about it. There are a lot of new photos that I was able to get from Joy's niece and nephew. They found me through Facebook, and they have sent me some fabulous photos of Joy that no one's ever seen. Amazing photos. And anyone who is a fan of Joy's would be thrilled to see these. Also, over the years, people have asked me all sorts of questions of, you know, about the book, about Joy, what happened here, what happened there, and I've addressed it in, you know, in the afterword. Answer the questions that people may have asked, you know, because people are curious, and I want them to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Questions like what? Just give me a couple of questions that they asked you. What they clarified in the book.
Oh, sure. Well, what happened to Stan? Well, you know, Joy's husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What happened to him? What happened to me? What's happened in my life? I tell people. I tell them, you know, about my life and. You know, how things have been going, and they've been, you know, pretty good. And no complaints, really no complaints. Mm-hmm. But, you know, little stumbling blocks along the way, you know, and a lot of problems because of that stupid silicone injection I had. So, so I talk about that.
That's, again, there's so many layers to this book, and I don't want to give too much away. I want people to go out and buy it. And it's on Bear Manor Media, am I correct? That's the publishing house?
Yes. Bear Manor Media is the publisher, and it's available on Amazon also and Barnes & Noble.
And, you know, like I said, you have to really, and I think it's just wonderfully, I mean, it's so subject to interpretation because as a feminist, I looked at this book one way, and a lot of people look but it's a love story, but it's also it's a timely piece of how women have been manipulated by society to look a certain way, and you know, every, you know, the human frailty that we all have, but certainly it's mostly pointed at women. And when you read this book, and the nice thing about this book is, and I think the way you introduced it, it could have been a who's who easily. And you didn't let it be that. You didn't name drop just to drop it. It was carefully placed.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I didn't want it to be that. I wanted it to, you know, to introduce people to the real Joy, the real wonderful human being that she was, not the glamour girl, even though she was very gorgeous and glamorous, but she had heart of gold, so sweet, wonderful person, but so vulnerable to Hollywood and all, you know, all the pressure that was put on her. You have to be the most beautiful. You have to be the most sexy. Yeah. And she fell into the trap. And one of the things that I put in there, she died for her beauty. Killed her. It killed her. And it didn't have to be. You know, it's just really sad.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember a couple of years ago we did a show about, you know, how women aren't allowed to age. We have a certain shelf life, and it usually stops at like 32, especially in Hollywood. But men like Sean Connery can always, you know, he could age gracefully and not be afraid of graying and all of that. And it's just Hollywood is just... I want to say the most toxic environment for most people, but especially women.
It's terrible. I mean, Joy was so nervous. I mean, When I met her, she was 39. And, I mean, that's past the shelf life.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's the nervousness. Oh, am I getting a wrinkle? Am I, you know, oh, my God, am I going to be able to work? How am I going to survive? How am I going to make a living? You know, and show business and acting, and that was her life. That was her, identity, being a sex symbol. And Hollywood doesn't want an over 40-year-old sex symbol. It just didn't work. And so, unfortunately, there weren't that many job opportunities for her. I mean, luckily she did sing, and there was more shelf life to that. So at least she's enterprising. She was sharp. She knew that, her time was waning, and she had to do something else. And she was an excellent singer, and she built a career around that. So, but as far as the other, it was scary. It was really scary for her.
Yeah. And, you know, again, we talk about the period of 1950s, and you think about somebody like Cary Grant, who, you know, worked throughout. He never had an issue. Again, permission to age. And I think that's what, you know, is the saddest part of all of this.
Right. And, I mean, even in films, they would have a Cary Grant, an older Cary Grant, or a Sean Connery, some young cookie. Someone 25 years younger, and that was acceptable. But heaven forbid, you know, a 40-year-old woman would be there with a younger guy or whatever, or an older guy. It just didn't work.
So let me ask personally, what do you think? Do you think it's changed much? What do you think?
Maybe a little, because there's been pressure put on. But the thing that I'm noticing is there are some wonderful actresses out there. God, Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman, and women like that who have formed their own production companies, and they're finding great product out there, and doing their own films. Otherwise, it wouldn't happen. Honest to God, that's the sad part. So they're producing their own films. So and Judi Dench, I mean, she works.
Yes.
Thank God she works. And there are some really super talented women. And because things are changing as far as production, they can work. The average woman without the money who doesn't, you know, work as much, you know, or have those funds. Or the name value, you know, they sort of fade into the woodwork, which is really, really, really sad.
And I know people who listen to the show often, I always pull out my Ida Lupino card, because she was a woman after my own heart, drop-dead gorgeous, but she wanted to make films. And she funded her own films because nobody else, no production house wanted to back her. And she, anything that she put together, she scraped together by herself. And she was actually a wonderful director. Rod Serling, who was an amazing progressive, had her direct two of his episodes on The Twilight Zone, because she saw the talent, and she was already being, you know, put on the shelf. She was, I think, 42 when she started directing a couple of and for 42 now, I'm going to be 59 in November. 42 is a baby. I can't even grapple.
It's pathetic. I mean, it's really pathetic. But thank heaven women are if the opportunity isn't there, they're making the opportunity. They're creating them. You know, they're recreating themselves. And they're fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. And I'm happy for them.
And I think that always goes to my point. If, you know, everything is, you know, when bosses don't want a union to come to the shop, they usually do this because they know it's going to strip them of power. And power, when you want to keep yours, is a very scary thing. And if women just, you know, put some issues aside and just stood together in solidarity, this would have been over 50 years ago.
50
years ago, it would have been over. So,
but they're afraid. Unfortunately, they're afraid of, you know, rocking the boat. Women are, you know, you're taught as a child, you don't rock the boat. You don't do that, you know. You follow the lead. You're not a leader. You're a follower. And, I mean, even when I was a kid, it was, you know, you're sort of like an afterthought. You're not, men rule it. And you have to follow suit. But women, not all, I wish more would do it, but, you know, they need to gird their loins and step up.
Yes.
You've got to do it. You've got to be strong. And more and more women, I hope, will be. Because nothing happens if you don't. You have to take the lead.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting to your point, and we're going back, this is always generational. I was, you know, I have sometimes I just keep things on in the background as I'm working, and it's just my version of white noise, and I just happen to have the Andy Griffith show on. And it's a very, you know, very white bread, very cute show, but, you know, there's always stuff in it that's going to make you cringe, always. Mm-hmm. As much as I love, you know, the sentiment of the show and, you know, single parents, you know, raising a child, I love that. I was watching it, I think it was last week, and Opie made friends with this girl who was faster than him, stronger than him, did everything better than him. And he really, really liked her, but he couldn't like her because he was embarrassed that he couldn't run as fast. And her mother had to talk to her and say, now, you know, you can't do this because, you know, he's a boy and you have to let him win. And I actually stopped what I was doing. And I said, okay, this is 1962. I get it. But I said, WTF. I said, are you kidding me? But that's what it was. And it all ended happily and they became friends again. Why? Because she didn't run fast and she let him win. And then everything in their world was okay and he bought her ice cream.
Yeah, I mean, women, girls were expected to downshift. You know, you can't be your full potential. You have to, always be less than. You know, you can't be strong or the brightest or whatever. But luckily, academically, women are achieving, and there are more and more women in doctoral programs, master's programs. They're super achieving. Academically, things are better, I think.
Women
in med school.
It's funny because I was having this discussion with a close friend of mine the other day, and she was saying, again, you know, when you're friends with people, you don't have to agree with what they feel. You just have to, you know, accept what they feel. And she was saying to me that she's, you know, and I get her point. She's just a little tired of people platforming whatever they stand for everything.
Right.
Everything, like everybody's issue comes out. Everybody's cause comes out. And I thought, I get sometimes it's like, okay, stop with the label, stop with this, stop with that. But then when you look at things, and talking, segueing into the two films we're going to be discussing, you look at the way things were, and you realize that's the reason we have to keep reminding people we can't slip back. We have to keep reminding people this happened. Remind our daughters this existed. You don't remember a time when, you know, there were separate water fountains. You know, it happened. So bringing it up, maybe in a softer way, but we have to keep gently reminding people that this did happen. And you know what? 4 years ago, I was very frightened things like that would come closer to happening again with that crazy administration we had.
Yeah.
So that's why we have to remind.
Yeah, we do. Women have to be vigilant. They have to they have to have confidence in themselves, and I think through your show, you know, that's one of the things that I really love, is your show really empowers women.
Thank you, baby.
And that's so important. So important.
Well, thank you, baby. Yeah. And the funny thing is, the reason we changed format was when that administration came into the White House. We realized, change the format, making it more of a feminist platform, because, you know, we were standing by as we're watching each of our rights slowly evaporate. So we changed the format immediately.
And I'm
here
glad
we are.
You did. Yeah,
thank you, Dawn.
We as the public need this.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? There are men, I always say, women couldn't have moved forward without our progressive brothers walking alongside of us. So
Absolutely.
Any of the men who are saying, you know, blah, 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 we're thanking the boys that were with us. We're not saying, progressive men were at every rally that I went to, every women's march that I went to for the past 5 years easily. There were men with their daughters and their son.
Wonderful guys that are very, very supportive of their sisters. They're not intimidated by women. They have a strong sense of self. They don't have to bully women or make women feel that they're inferior. And a lot of this is, you know, how they're brought up. You know, we can learn to respect women as their equal, not someone subservient.
Right.
I mean, like The Handmaid's Tale, that's scary stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
That's
very close to home. Yeah, exactly. I think tell women is, you know, when people say, well, you know, men did this, but, you know, women usually have, especially like in the 50s and the 60s, had more access to their children because it was usually a single income household. So women were home with the babies.
Sure.
We have to raise our little boys differently. So because we want men to respect women, we have to have little boys respect girls. That's where it starts.
Right.
So if you think it's any different, so start raising with gender symmetry.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Our movies today.
I'm sorry?
I didn't mean to cut you off. No, I was going to say, you finished your statement. I was going to announce our movies of today. So you just finished your statement, sweetie.
Little boys need to respect little girls. And, you know, and if there is that appreciation for the differences in people, I think things would be so much better. I think it's improving. I think it's definitely improving. But it's going to take time because all of that is so ingrained. You know, men are superior, always superior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're just an afterthought. You're there as a, you know, support. You're the support system. You're not the frontline person. You're in the background. And there are some progressive women like you who are out there bringing it home. And I'm so grateful that you are.
Thank you, darling. And you too. You too. Certainly.
I'm trying.
We both. I always say, maybe your thing is not being involved in physical protest, but there's always a way that you could show power in your day. You could disagree with somebody. There's always something that you could do to help whatever group that you're involved in. And protesting isn't for everybody, but there's always something that you could do. Writing your congressman, these little things matter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you can lead by example, too. You know, just show people that you can do, whatever you want to achieve. Women can do it. And, they're breaking the glass ceiling all the time.
You just look at the elections. You look at how many women are running for city council. It's just wonderful. And I also say,
fabulous.
When years ago when Sarah Palin was the choice for vice president, people were saying, "Oh, I bet you love it." No, I don't. I'm not going to support a woman just because she's a woman. If I think she's a dimwit, I'm going to call it out and say, you know what? She doesn't represent me. Well, you know what I'm saying, sweetheart. She doesn't represent what I want. And that's it. And look at her. Men found her attractive. Somehow she got on a certain level of government, but I never saw why. I'm sure she might be a nice person. But I'm not going to choose her, and I'm not going to stand by her because she's a woman. I know better than that.
No, exactly. You know, you go by substance, you know, what's in there, you know, what are they saying, you know, what are they trying to do? They have to be competent. Just because someone is female doesn't make them a superstar, you know?
No. And I remember one guy said, "Oh, I'm sure you know you would change your party to vote for her." And I said, "You're not giving them much credit, are you?" "Of course not."
"No.
Look at her and look at me. That's not a woman I would support. Why would you say that?"
Right. I mean, there's so many confusing things out there.
Mixed
messages. Just because someone's a woman doesn't make them the best. You know, you have to be competent.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Most women see that, you know. Just misunderstandings, unfortunately.
Yeah. So our movies today, my Ebert. Okay, I'll be fiscal today. And then next week we'll switch, and you'll be the other one. So get comfortable. We're going to switch it up. I'm glad we actually picked these two, because as I was sifting over stuff, I was thinking, and I don't want to give away too much of either films, because you know I want people to see it. But and I'm not going to issue a spoiler alert. But Carol, and which was based on the book The Price of Salt, which I definitely have to read. And it was written by Patricia Highsmith. And I didn't hear of that book until I saw the film, which was brilliant. And the other film we're going to be talking about is Disobedience. Now, we're talking about two very different generations.
Sure.
Carol was the 50s. I think early 50s as opposed to later 50s.
Yeah.
And
I
Disobedience
think so.
was a cultural thing. It was a religious thing, and it was 2017, so I think it didn't have to be any, it was right about now. It was contemporary. What I liked but most about this is were the male leads, and I'm looking at the male lead in Carol, and was very typical of the time, bitter, confrontational, and certainly wanted to torture his wife in as many ways as possible for her sexual choice. And then the man, the husband in Disobedience.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're talking about there was a 40-year difference, 50-year difference. He took a higher road in the whole thing. And I don't want to say too much about it, but was a person that, again, he was a spiritual person, but a person who rose above his ego to realize, okay, this woman is not in love with me the way I'm in love with her.
Right.
And she's asking for freedom, and I'm going to glorify her with that.
I mean, his reaction toward her after, you know, much soul searching, you could see it tearing him, you know, because he was totally in love with that woman. He was, you know, I felt very compassionate toward him, and, you know, he took the high road, and he loved her enough to let her go. My God.
Exactly. And, you know, as I'm watching, it's like, my God, you know, we all hope that we're that type of person, if we're put in that situation, that we could take the high road. But it's just so hard when the person you built your life around, you know, has decided that this is not for me.
Right.
It's just, and again, you couldn't have written this storyline in the 50s. It just would not have existed.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No, she would have been kept, locked in the bedroom or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And you think about Carol, which I have to say, the acting was great. You had Sarah Paulson in there, who always shows up in these things and does a great job.
Mm-hmm.
You had Rooney Mara. You had Cate Blanchett. It was just their eye for detail, and they were just so on point with the cars and the dress attire.
Oh,
and
it was just,
it really was. And it had the most amazing thing about the movie, and I think you probably saw it too, there was never real sunlight except for a few frames. It was the dark winter. It was night. There was only, did you notice that? There was only a couple of frames where the sun was out. And I'm sure that was specific to, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it really brought you to mind how the 50s were for women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gloomy. Very, very, very gloomy.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And, you know, and I think, of course, that wasn't just random. The director, and I forget the director's name, played it that way. I mean, there were some snow scenes that were, you know, that were sweet and innocent. But outside of that, it was night. It was gloomy. And there was only a couple of times that I remember it was in sunlight, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what an interesting, really good film.
It really was.
Yeah, and it was unlike what we talked about last week about the Fox and the Children's Hour. You know, somebody had to die.
Yes.
And in these two films that we're talking about, you know, there was hope. You know,
there was
hope for women who love women. You know.
Yeah.
And how liberating, how wonderfully uplifting it was to see that.
Yeah.
You know, it gives you some, you know, a hopeful feeling.
Yeah.
So,
well, and I felt bad last week. I had people writing in saying, wow, that was a real downer, because some of the two movies that we
it was a downer.
Hey, lovey. But... The two ones that we picked were The Children's Hour, which is I will always say that's one of my favorite films ever. It was just brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
The two women who were hopelessly in love with another woman that may or may not have returned their feelings died, one by her own hands, and the other, it was a supposed accident. I'm not going to tell you which is which, but and it was a downer, but the thing is, yeah, because this happened, because things were, right. But Carol ended on a note of hope.
Sure.
Disobedience, it had an open end that was better than, but it didn't really end the way Carol did, where you knew there was a promise of tomorrow in their relationship.
No. Right. The only thing was that one scene where she runs after her, you know, as she's driving away in the cab to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, keep in touch, let me know. You know, so I felt hopeful. Things are going to be great, but, you know, there was, you know, a glimpse of hope.
Yeah. You know, we got permission to write our own ending. It was open-ended, so it was fine for me to infuse my thoughts. Okay, I hope that, you know, somewhere along the line, you know, their roads are going to cross, and either deliberately or happenstance, I hope so. You know, I have to say, Carol made me feel better, and I'm not going to give away the final frame. That final frame, you know which one I'm talking, it was priceless.
Yes. Wasn't it great? Oh my god!
Oh my god!
It made me feel so good. It was a feel good ending.
And you know, it's funny because you think about the theater actors and the actors of years ago and how they didn't have to have any dialogue to say anything. And that final frame is what I caught. Cate Blanchett said nothing, absolutely nothing. The camera work was great. It was a nice, soft zoom in. Everything
yeah.
red in her eyes. Everything.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that great? Oh, my God, yeah.
That was, again, we're looking at it as, you know, I'm trying to not picture all the camera crew around her and everybody. But she just was able to, on the word the, create a warmth in her eyes that wasn't there, you know, as she's talking
yeah.
to the different people at the table.
Right.
And I thought
right.
that it was, she's definitely an underrated actor, I think. She just, that
oh,
was just
wonderful.
Wonderful. Yeah.
yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, I mean, it was so hopeful. And I mean, it was just, it was a feel-good ending for me. Just like,
mm-hmm.
oh, my God. You know, you could see the love in her eyes and the softness and like, oh, my God, yay.
yeah,
yeah. Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
Just great.
Well, that's why I wanted to pull those two movies, because people were day drinking last week when we were with the head down. It's last week, me and you.
Yeah, we put them on a bummer. Oh, well, sorry. yeah,
but
well, things
happens.
Have been a bummer. Yeah, things have been a bummer,
yeah.
you know, for LGBT people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has been a bummer. It hasn't been all peaches and cream and love and light
no.
and happy ending. You know, finally,
mm-mm.
you know, there's a, you know, with the anniversary of marriage equality and newer laws decriminalizing love.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not perfect everywhere. I mean, and there's starting, some states are starting to go backwards, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But,
we'll do that.
Of course, but at least the law of the land now grants equal rights as far as being with the person you love, having the ability to just be with that person and not have to worry, you know, because you know. Things were so terrible. I mean, I've actually known of people whose partner died, and they
mm-hmm.
left the house for a minute, and the relatives came in and locked them
mm-hmm.
out forever. You know, and that happened. But if you're married to someone, at least you have some rights.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the first show that you were on, you were even talking about clubs that you could just, you know, there were always police raids, and you could be pulled out for touching somebody, not even holding hands, putting your hand on somebody's shoulder.
Sure. Yeah. No touch bars. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of the people that were pulled out were the pretty ones.
There was always that,
do you want to go to jail or do you want to go in the back of the car with me?
Because
I know women that were pulled out and, you know, had to make a choice. And, you know, it hasn't always been wonderful. And thankfully, things are a little bit better.
You know what? I think last week I was talking about the place that I had my business in for like 20 years was on East 7th Street and Lexington Avenue. I had the penthouse. But I found out that years before that, it was a gay club. And it was like Tallulah Bankhead. All these people were there. And Liberace was there. He played piano. And the woman who owned the club was Madame Spivey. She was an actor that you would know. She always played like a gun mall in all these old movies. But she played piano, but she had like, you know, a backup piano player because she played well, but not that well. And her brilliance in putting it up there, and it was mostly women, but everybody was, you know, welcome to come, but it was mostly women and their partners. She put it on the top floor because police don't bother. They will raid places that are street level and below. But if you had
to
take an elevator up, yes. Was that brilliant? I knew you'd appreciate
that.
I thought that that was absolutely, I mean, again, she had it only for like, I think, not eight, maybe 8 years. But
yeah.
She really thought this through. If a cop has to wait for an elevator in a lobby, most likely, you know, it's going to take him away from something else. So the police raids usually happen ground level. No one ever had to travel up with an elevator or stairs or, yeah.
Oh, that wow,
brilliant?
That's fascinating. Yeah, I had
yeah.
no idea. I mean, whoa.
That's, and from what I wrote, read, they never were raided. And it was known. I mean, it was, again, she covered it with Cabaret. You know, Carol
yeah.
Channing was there. Everybody was there.
Okay.
So you really couldn't. But if people went in, you could see clearly was, you know, same-sex couple sitting at the table and drinking and enjoying themselves.
Yeah, do you think that they took people off, too?
Pardon?
Do you think that also, Madam Spivey had to pay people off to keep them being harassed?
Hard to say, and obviously that would never be information that was given out. But you know something?
Sure.
Who knows? Who
yeah.
knows? It could have been, look, I had a business on the East Side for many years, but I always thought that cool stuff happened in the West Village, on Broadway. I never gave too much credit to the East Side for having any cool and happening scenes. I never did, and maybe that's my problem. So maybe just geographically, nobody thought anything was going to happen. The police thought the same thing.
Right, and they were also wealthy people, successful
yes.
people. So mm-hmm. I think that probably, helped that situation along a lot better.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that didn't hurt, you know. I'm sure
yeah.
that didn't hurt. But I thought that was so well thought out by her,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Oh, yeah,
she, you know,
so
yeah, she knew exactly what she was doing. She knew exactly what she was doing.
Oh, wow. How exciting. Did you feel the vibes in your office?
Okay, now I'm going to share something with you. Now, this is
what
I found
out
5 years ago, way before I left there. I was in a magazine and somebody contacted me. I think I even told you the story offline. Somebody contacted me and said, is that Madam Spivey's Rooftop, which was a gay club in the 50s, because I was at 139 East 57th Street in the penthouse. And I said, no, I think you're wrong. You're absolutely wrong, because I'm there 15 years and blah, blah, blah. I would know.
That's right.
Okay. So John, who's had my nonsense, is up to here with my nonsense over the years, said, why don't you just look it up? And I said, I would know. My name is on the lease. Blah, 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 blah. He said, just look it up. And sure enough, it was. So I contacted this guy, and I said, you're absolutely right. And I did some research on it. And I remember the next day, I was so excited about this. It's like, you know, I fell in love with my place again. And I'm so excited. I'm sitting there with my assistants. I'm telling her, I said, do you understand the enormity of where we are? Are you getting this? Are you? And she's, you know, she was British, so she was very deadpan with everything I said. She was just like, And I said, do you understand the music that was played here? And
oh,
she said,
God.
I'm going to stop you for a minute. And anybody who knows me, anybody who came into my office knows there's always Billie Holiday. There's always old stuff playing. So she stopped me right there and she said, but what you're missing the point is the music that still is playing here. And I went, ooh.
Oh,
I
my
actually
God.
Got chilled.
Oh, yeah.
So the same music is playing here that played 50 years ago.
Yeah, you just kept
and
it
I was
going.
Like, wow. And I was so full of myself the rest of the day. I should have been shot, but I wasn't.
No. Oh, my God.
But it was
just one of those
cool things. Yeah.
Yeah, you were meant to be there. You were actually meant to be there. Keep it going.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah. And she only got 9 years out of it. She wanted a franchise and go into Paris and everything. But, you know, liquor license and everything then was just astronomical. And I don't think she lived that much after that. She died, I think, when she was probably like early 60s, so she didn't live long.
How awful.
So we love our Madam Spivey. But getting back to Carol.
Yes.
My thinking in the whole movie, the only problem that I had in the whole movie was, and I think they had a great chemistry. There seemed to be such, it took them so long, but I guess that's just the way it was. Their kiss on New Year's, they were together for some time. The kiss on New Year's was, and I said to myself, how, I mean, they waited that long, and it seemed to be like, what, it was probably, well, no, maybe not. It was about a month, because they met around the holidays,
right.
So holidays probably
right.
started around Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know, usually not that far after that. So maybe it wasn't that long. But I remember thinking that was, yeah, that was a while. That was a while.
Well, there, I understand that from my
mm-hmm.
perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I want to get it, yeah.
Yeah, in like female-female relationships,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's always that hesitancy, you know, fear of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that Carol wanted, she was afraid that if she made an advance toward this woman,
mm-hmm.
She would lose her. I mean, I've been
mm-hmm.
there. I've been
mm-hmm.
there. I know.
Of course, yeah.
You know, you're scared. You're frightened that you'll upset someone. You might lose
mm-hmm.
whatever you have. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
especially during that time, you know, in the
mm-hmm.
in the 50s, you know, that, first of all, you could go to jail. And,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
It's illegal. And secondly, I mean, reputation could be destroyed,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
So it's a scary proposition. So you're not going to come on strong to someone. So it's going to take a lot longer. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Things have gotten better now, but
mm-hmm.
still there's a hesitancy. So
you know what card I would have played?
What?
It means to cut you off. What card I would have played? Now this is just me, not being the character, just me thinking. In that scene where, what's his name? He's a lovely actor. Kyle something. I forgot. He was in Homefront.
Yeah.
He's wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And he was great in this.
Yeah.
When he comes in and he's screaming and yelling, and they're spending the weekend together and at her house, and he's screaming
right.
and yelling, and she decides to get on the train and go back home.
Right.
I would have stayed. To me, that's like clearly she knew that. She felt something for this woman. And even if you're just staying as a friend, I
mm-hmm.
would have just stayed. Listen, you're going through something. Let's sit here, have a drink. I would not have gone home. I would have stayed.
Right.
But he already left. Stay there and try to sort it out with this woman,
right.
even if nothing happens that night. You're there as
right.
a friend. You're there as support. And in my Scorpio way of thinking, that's four dates right there. That's four dates right there.
Exactly. But I don't think that character was as strong as you.
Mm. Mm. She was compassionate. She was very sensitive. So even
mm-hmm.
if they just sat in the house together and just let it go wherever, and you let this woman cry in front of you, and after a scene of toxic exchange happens. I know
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have left the room. I would not have left the room. I would have stayed there unless she asked me to leave.
Right.
What are your thoughts?
I'm taking in into the perspective of the time in the you know
mm-hmm.
in the 50s. Women weren't that strong.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean. Yeah. They reacted from fear more than strength.
Yeah.
I think. And I think she was hesitant. She didn't know what was going on really in her head.
Mm.
Everything was so up in the air.
Yeah. This woman met, and go away for a weekend with her
yeah,
and be
good.
There
she
around the holidays. which is a big thing. You know, somebody you're with for the holidays, there's still something there, even if it's nothing sexual. It's obviously the thought of a good friendship.
Sure.
That's why I would have just stayed by and just not gone home and felt horrible and leave her to feel horrible on her own.
Right.
It just, that to me, and that, again, that's just what I read into the art, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, but I think that she was probably frightened also, frightened of her emotions and what she was feeling about her.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there
and the guy,
a lot
the
of
guy coming
in
back
play.
Too.
Yeah, a lot of things in play. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't think she was as strong of a character, you know, as Carol was.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was much quieter, much, you know, much younger.
Oh, yeah, 20 years, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So, and, you know, I try and put myself in that position. I probably would have bolted. I would have been afraid. I would have not knew what to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it was foreign to her. I mean, she had never obviously been with a woman. She didn't, you know, she didn't know what she was in for. Well, even though she probably had, you know, strong feelings toward her. You know, this is like a whole new world.
And
probably, you know, scary. So a lot of people run from things they don't understand.
And you know, to that point, I'm thinking, I'm projecting, you know, the mindset of today and my own personal, you know, this is just the way I would handle a situation. But, there's a character difference here. But I thought that the point that found to be a pivotal moment in the script is when this her boyfriend, who is clearly madly in love with her, and Rooney Mara asks him, "Were you ever in love with a boy?" And I thought that, wow, that's I think that's why I didn't get, if she was strong enough to ask a question like that and wait for his answer. And honestly, you ask a question like that, you are putting yourself out there a little bit. You are why is she asking me this?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's why I didn't get it. I thought that was I was proud of her, because that, you know, that's the question that you ask.
She showed strength there. She really did. I think she was coming into understanding who she was and what her feelings were. I mean, it's a big deal to face your sexuality for a lot of people. It is a major deal.
Yeah.
And, I mean, luckily I never had to deal with that. I was, you know, I just kind of, this was it, and I'm happy, and I didn't have the hang-ups. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, up when I was with Joy, when I was first with Joy, I would never have made any advances toward her. Oh, my God, never. Because, you know, I was so thrilled just to be around her, just to know her. I wasn't going to make a terrible mistake and alienate her.
Right.
You know, that could have gone either way. You know, how would I know?
So,
I can just go by my own experience.
Well, and that's why I thought that's a question that you ask unafraid of what the person is going to ask you. So I thought that took a pair of balls.
Yeah.
And then when the scene when she's leaving to spend the weekend with her, he says, I think the quote was, you're putting off our trip for a crush. So he got it.
He knew it.
So she already, you know, she's alienating him, and clearly they weren't meant for each other. So no stain on her. But hearing those words come back to her, she knew, you know, this weekend might be it, but it's closer to something than it was 2 weeks before that when they were in the restaurant.
That's so true. That is so true. Yeah.
See, that's why we're discussing these films, sweetheart.
Yeah, it's very good. Things that I never even thought about. Duh. but you, the little Scorpio, you know all this stuff, and I'm just doop-de-doop-doop.
See,
so,
we
am
just...
Am I Ebert or...
I don't know. Who do I say I want to be this week? I think I said your sister this week, and then we'll switch next week. Okay. Okay, that's where I am. I don't, you know, who knows? But we'll switch it next week, and people could just play along with us. It doesn't matter. But
we're having fun.
We're having fun.
And
nobody's
learning,
crying.
I'm learning as we're going.
But as an artist, and you are a wonderful artist too. And we'll talk about your jewelry and your art in a little bit. But isn't that what you want? You know, when you watch a film. The best thing I think that you could do is go out afterwards if you're with people and discuss it, because
oh,
you
it's
realize
so much fun, yeah,
yeah, and you see it differently.
I love doing it. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I love discussing films with you. Yeah, it's. I mean, a lot of stuff. You know, I take a lot of stuff at just face value. I don't go quite as deeply into stuff as into the analysis as you do. I think it's wonderful. I love your perspective. I really
do. Thank you. But you know, that's the whole thing. Sometimes digging too deep, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. But, you know, I always go forward, get right in there, and then I pan out and I decide, okay, maybe I was right, maybe I was wrong. But that's the beauty of it. There's no wrongs. It's all right.
No, exactly. And it's just fun. It's fun to discuss it. It's fun to really think about it. And I love the films that you chose. I really did. I watched Carol again because I've seen it. Mm-hmm. I think this is the second time. I saw it a few days ago, and then last night, just, you know, as a refresher, I saw Disobedience again. Mm-hmm. And I saw more stuff this time that I missed the first time, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God, wow.
You know, again, there's the oppression in one was, you know, the decade that it was shot, and the oppression in Disobedience was religious, you know.
This
woman going back to bury her father in an Orthodox community where, you know, this just doesn't happen. And even though it was contemporary, it's still stuff that's pretty well frowned upon.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Question, one thing that I didn't pick up on and I wanted to ask you, where was her family, and where in Europe were they? England?
They were in England, yeah. And she came from New York.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew
they were
in from England.
Yeah. They were in London. And interesting fact, the actor that played the husband actually lives in Brooklyn. So they had to go on location. It was filmed in England and in Canada. So he actually lived not too far from where I used to live in Brooklyn Heights. And he's there with his wife and two kids. Isn't that so? Yeah, yeah. Just a little fun fact. Use it as you want. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, no, I wasn't sure, and I was going to ask you, you know, if you – had any idea, because I had the feeling that it was shot in England, but I wasn't positive because it wasn't super clear, you know.
I think they probably just left it like a little vague for a reason, but it obviously was a more it wasn't a big, you know, city. It was just probably one little small town, and
I think they left it. Yeah, and the community, I mean, was very, very religious, you know, that one area where the father lived, and Esty and the husband. I mean, it was such a rigid life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, unfortunately, organized religion can be very oppressive, and usually, I mean, look, I think both sides lose out, both genders lose out in some way,
It's
usually more angled at women, but, you know, yeah, that was, I think everybody was wonderful. You had Rachel Weisz, you had Rachel McAdams in that, and they were just wonderful. Every scene together was great. They played off each other wonderfully. So
it was so good. I mean, the chemistry between the two of them was just beautiful, really beautiful.
And I question why that movie didn't do well, because I remember it was in the theaters and then it went to video. So I don't really get it. And it was 2017. So I don't get why it didn't do well. I don't think anybody was nominated for an award or anything like that.
Yeah. Do you think it was because of the religious theme?
It could have been, but you know, there were so many more things that got released that were, what was the movie? You would probably remember too. Came out 20 years ago. Mel Gibson, it was something about something of the Christ. I forgot. What do you remember the name of it? I'm trying to think.
No.
I can't think of it.
No, but I know I know what you're talking about, and I remember all the buzz and the hype about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the Vatican was rocking with that one, as they will. They were really upset, but somehow it got a lot of awards. I think did Sundance. It got. He was up for an award. He didn't win it, but the supporting cast did. So that's why I'm saying I don't. That was certainly a little bit more fire and brimstone against, you know, Catholicism than this was necessarily hurtful. So I don't get it. Is a bad release for whatever reason.
Yeah. Didn't have good PR people.
Well, and that's all the spin. It's all about the spin, baby.
Yeah.
It's all about the sizzle.
Yeah,
that's still the stink.
Yeah.
Speaking
is.
Of, I want to make sure that we give you shout outs. You're doing quite media spin. You were on TV Confidential with Ed Robinson, and it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
Yeah, what a great guy he is. Dynamite guy. I really enjoyed being on his show.
Yeah, and what was nice is I was thinking, okay, how am I going to listen? It's going to be here, it's going to be there, and you got, oh my God, so many West Coast affiliates, and then you had a lot of the Southern Belt, and I was saying, okay, is Brooklyn going to be in the house? And Brooklyn was in the house. So we got to listen.
Cool.
So at 10 o'clock at night, I was like, yeah, this is nice. So
yay for Brooklyn.
We make a lot of noise, but we count. And you're also, I'm trying to think of what else you're doing. You're going to be on Wendy Stewart.
Yes, August 4th.
If These Wolves Could Talk, August 4th.
I'm excited about
that.
And I'm
doing
Grace Collins' show. Tales of Tinseltown. She has a really good Hollywood related show, you know, all about celebrities and film. That'll be fun. And I'm taping it on Friday, and I'll let you know when it's airing. It'll probably air either that day or, you know, right close to that. So I'm excited. Everything is great. And the book is coming out tomorrow, the re-release of the book. And my jewelry's doing well, and I mean, life is good. I mean, at this age, suddenly I'm an overnight success.
Isn't this the coolest thing ever?
Yeah.
Now let's talk about you. You have reps now, so let's talk about your jewelry a little bit.
Oh my God! Yeah, my jewelry's taking off. It's so exciting. I have a team helping me. I have a rep. Her name is Sherry Diamond. She's in L.A., and she's showing my jewelry. And Karen Finkel is my business manager, and she is just really getting the word out of, you know, and I'm getting a website. And, I mean, right now I'm on Etsy, but, it's going big. I'm thrilled. I am thrilled. That, between that and the book and, I mean, life is perfect. It's absolutely perfect now, and I'm thrilled. Just, I mean, wow. That's all I can say is wow. I mean, it's been a tough time at times, and now things are starting to fall into place, and I'm beyond excited, and I hope there are more opportunities. Remember, we talked about how my book was in the curriculum at a local high school for the IB. I'm hoping more of that happens, where I can speak to the kids, because I want to stop bullying, and I think by kids reading the book and understanding that the trite saying, love is love. It's the truth. Mm-hmm. Love is love, and if you understand that, maybe you'll be a little more open-minded, and you won't bully someone else for being a little bit different. It'll open eyes and open hearts. That's what I want. That's the direction I want to go.
I think, for the most part, I always call, the younger generation, they can tend to be in front of their phones, in front of their computers, and generally slackers that don't want to go out to work and blah, blah, blah. But I will say this about them. They are far more accepting than past generations.
Yeah.
Bullying certainly is always going to be, just because it is. But, specific bullying doesn't happen as much. And I could tell you, I remember my youngest goddaughter, who was probably 14 at the time, we had moved upstate, and John and I were in a restaurant with her. And she said, "Oh, Aunt Lori, I want to go over to say hello to," I forgot the kid's name, "and his boyfriend." And I said, "And his boyfriend?"
Wow.
And I looked at her, and she goes, "Yeah, Aunt Lori," because, Aunt Lori's not cool. Aunt Lori knows nothing. She was born old. She has no idea what's going on.
Oh,
and
my
she
God.
Said, "Yeah. He's going out with him." I said, "Well, good for him. Well,
God.
Go over." And it was so wonderful. This was probably 10 years ago.
Whoa.
In her 30s now,
Talk about progressive. Because still, 15 years ago, things were still, a little dicey. You had to be careful. And it wasn't quite so open. Now things are a lot more open. People saying, "Oh, this is my husband, this is my wife," and I go, that still just, it sort of still jars me a little bit, because I'm not used to it. Things are getting better. They're not perfect, but they're certainly getting better.
Yeah. And, the truth is, 15 years ago was still, it was a long time, but it was also, we lived upstate, and I loved upstate. There were pockets that were very rednecky, it wasn't like living on Central Park West, and my goddaughter said this. It was upstate where it wasn't as, now it's certainly a little bit more progressive, but there were still areas where, there was more conservative point of view, very meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
So it was beautiful. And I remember John and I looked at each other, and we had these, we didn't want to make her seem like she did anything that we didn't expect of her, but we had these huge grins on our faces, and it was just wonderful.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, it's so great that you and your husband are so progressive and so open-minded and so loving and open toward everyone. And that is, that's so beautiful. And it really touches my heart. It really does.
I was a bad girl, and I don't know if I told you this story, so I'm just going to, being you mentioned my lovely husband, he has a show, as you listen, you're kind enough to listen, Jazz Just After Dark, and we kind of have the same audience, the women that listen to this show will tune into that show, although I'm not on the air, I'm the producer, so sometimes I just stick my head in and say a couple of things.
He's always boring. That's so cute.
Exactly.
I love watching. I mean, you're there doing your shtick, and there you are. You're in your producer outfit. With the beret, and it's
so
fun. It's fun to watch.
It's amazing how I hold on to friends, because sometimes I'm a moron.
Tune
in. But
no, it's a good show.
He's always very gracious. He's the first one that always says, I want you to speak more, but you know what, I'm busy doing other things, so I chime in when I chime in, but I really, it's his show, I like to stay back a little bit.
Okay. Sure.
So a couple of times, John went to move my mic near my face, you know, because he didn't hear, I guess I wasn't coming out of one speaker, so he did this a few times, sound clearer. He wasn't man speaking. So I got letters, and I was stupid enough to tell him. I got some emails saying from a few different women, you know, it's really not cool. He's always got to be, you're capable enough to adjust your own mic. So what do? I go back, Alex, I go back and I tell him this. Why would I do that? Because I'm an idiot. I tell him this. He felt horrible. And I was just saying, by the way, maybe you don't want to adjust my mic because I sounded good. I heard where I was coming out. You don't need to do
it.
So I told him don't do it that much. But I'm going to give the example of Judy Garland on Ed Sullivan adjusting Liza Minnelli's mic when she sang with her the first time. Now, she wasn't doing it. A lot of people said she was jealous of her daughter. And I said, you know what? It was just a mother who's been singing for a long time. And, you know, and again, a mother's thing is to rush in and do it, be hands-on. And that's what it was. And it looked like her hands were all over her mic and she was pushing it away from her mouth. She was pushing it away from her mouth because she was hitting certain notes that should have been extended a certain way, and that's all she did. So for the women who were, you know, up in arms about that, he is certainly the first one to say, talk as much as you want. He wasn't trying to overreach, overspeak, my guy. So I just want to make that disclaimer here. Yeah, I want to make that disclaimer.
No, I figured that one out. John is a great guy.
Yeah, he didn't mean harm. But like I said,
of course not.
I probably should have phrased it a different way, but, you know, it was kind of like, and don't touch my mic kind of thing, because I could be fresh. But, so, yeah.
Break your arm.
Yeah, no, just don't do that. But that's really it.
Yeah.
So he didn't do that. So just clear that up before next Friday's show.
Yeah. Well, it's a good show. I enjoy it.
No, thank you. But I want to talk about the rest of your art, your painting. We don't ever touch on that. We never touch on that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love painting. I haven't. I have to get back to it. I haven't done it in a while. And where I live in the Palm Springs area, and it hit 124 the other day. So it's a little toasty, and I have to. And I work outside. I work on my porch. Oh my God, I'll fry. But I want to get back to my painting. I've done very well with it, which is really amazing. I'm always amazed. I'm always amazed that people like my stuff. So I will start painting more and showing again. I've shown in a lot of different places, And I've been really lucky, Lori. Really, really lucky in my life. Yeah, I have. I think some of the things that I do, the average person likes. It's not that avant-garde or, you know, that unusual. You know, it appeals to the masses. So that's good. That's, you know, it's thrilling.
I'm going to ask you a question. I love asking artists this question.
Okay.
What inspires you more? What inspires you more, happiness or pain?
Oh, God, that's a tough one. I love writing prose, and that comes from pain. That always comes from pain. I'm more creative when things aren't good. Actually, as far as my jewelry, I'm in a good space. My jewelry comes from happiness.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, my painting comes from happiness. My writing came from sorrow, a lot of sorrow. I mean, the book was... It was a celebration of her, but there was a lot of sorrow behind it. So, I think it depends on which creative area. You know, yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
Interesting. How one would be stimulated by this and the other would be stimulated by that. That's very interesting.
Kind of weird. Yeah, definitely. When I'm making my jewelry, I'm a happy camper. I love. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love doing it. It gives me so much pleasure doing it, especially when you know I think it's pretty.
Oh,
that's pretty, and that makes me happy. Or when I paint, oh, I love that. You know, it's pretty. But my inner stuff, like when I'm writing or writing prose, you know, it's more introspective and more, you know, sort of dealing with past sorrow, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because, I mean, again, I guess there are certain art forms that you see the long-suffering artist, and mm-hmm. it usually is music, mm-hmm. and it's usually painting or writing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess it makes perfect sense, you know, but I guess, you know, it could go the other way. It's really just the individual.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I don't know happiness might went okay. I'm changing course on this a little bit. When I was writing a lot of my prose, I was writing it to mm-hmm. joy. When when we were happy and everything was wonderful. Yeah, there was a lot of joy and a lot of happiness with mm-hmm. that. And then after the fact, then there was the sadness. But I wrote love poems to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those were really happy, really, really happy. So the writing comes from happiness also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
I think creativity. I think creativity is just going to come from the, you know, the bowels of the being. And,
absolutely.
You know, wherever it
emotions.
Is, it's just going to come out as, I mean, you think about all the great songs that were born of questioning your sexual identity. I mean, look at Cole Porter. I mean, just
right.
amazing works that we got from him. And, you know, mm-hmm. you know, being, whether it was, you know, being a substance abuser, I think, look, talent will find its way out of you. That's mm-hmm. just the way it is. It's just a matter of,
right.
you know, where you channel it into. So I guess it's just, you know, but I always like asking that question because some people just say, you know what, I can't write unless I'm you know, fermenting about something. So
mm-hmm.
it's interesting.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, I think it just depends on emotion. It could be good emotion, happy, mm-hmm. happy. But I think it depends on the magnitude of the emotion as
mm-hmm.
to how creative, you know, whether it's great happiness or great sorrow. You know, sort of middle of the road, I'm not real creative. as far as writing prose or writing in general, you know. There has to be tremendous emotion, and that comes out. That comes out, creatively.
Yeah. Look, there's got to be the match that lights the fuse, you know.
Oh,
and
sure.
Again, where you land. So, but yeah, mm-hmm. that's just something that I wanted to ask you last week, and I just somehow again we just go off the rails sometimes, and somehow I didn't have the time to ask you. That's what I wanted to. Now,
magnitude. Yeah.
Now your choice. Tell me a little bit about your pick for what we're going to be discussing next week. Tell me a little bit about it.
Oh yeah. After I watched Disobedience last night, I'm just kind of cruising on Hulu, and I saw a film. Gosh, I can't even think of the name of it. It's
The Two of Us. Wasn't that
The
that
Two
it?
Of Us? Yes. The Two of Us. It's about an older lesbian couple who mm-hmm. were closeted because of family. One of the women had two children and didn't want her children to know that she was in this wonderful, loving relationship with her neighbor next door. Her love moved into an apartment right next door to her. So they both lived in one of the apartments, but the other one had one for show. I mean, they were that cautious about showing any kind of relationship. So rarely do you see films about older couples, and the devotion, the love that they have for each other, and then there's some tragedy, but it's also so uplifting. Uplifting that you can feel, and it's in French. I mean, the subtitle, you don't even pay attention to the subtitles because you can feel it. I mean, you feel all their emotion. You know, like when you were talking about the look in Carol's eyes in that film, see it in their eyes. You see it in their expressions, their movements, the tenderness between the two of them. It's just so wonderful. Yeah, I want you to see that. And I'd really like to go into, more detail with you next week about it.
Mm-hmm. And now I'm trying to think, what am I going to pair that with? Because I like to have two.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what I could pair that with. Hmm.
Yeah, there are more gay and lesbian films. In fact, Hulu knows all about me because they keep suggesting all these films to me. So they got my number. So I'll be telling you what they're suggesting. And then, or I'll watch something, and if it's really good, I'll let you know.
Well, I want the way we've done it. I want a contrast. I want to figure out. I want something against it. I'll do my research later too. I'll help you out, Boo. I'll do my research on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh,
I'm here to help. I'm here to serve.
Yes, you are.
But
I appreciate it.
There was something, and I'm going back in like 1979. I forgot. It was one of those movies of the week. And I forgot who yes. It was Lynn Redgrave. And, oh, my God, who was it Mariette Hartley? It was Mariette Hartley. And they didn't kiss, okay? But Seda Thompson, remember Seda Thompson? She was a great theater actress.
Yeah.
She was in Family, I think it was. So I remember the commercial. She walked in, and now don't forget, it's like 1979, maybe 1980. There wasn't the first kiss, same-sex kiss on TV, but you just saw them with, I guess it was they were pulling away from the kiss, so they were just holding each other. Big Seda Thompson saying, "Why were you kissing that woman?" And that was the trailer.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It was, and I'm not trying to make fun of. This was a time when they made movies of the week, and they actually were good. They actually had some substance to it, and you watched them. Don't forget, we just had seven channels then. So the movies of the week had to count.
Three. Yeah.
Three?
Wow.
Really? What was three?
That was before you were born.
three
channels. Three. Yeah, ABC, NBC, and CBS. There was no cable. That was it.
So you didn't have 9 and 11?
No.
And 13?
No.
This
was the dark ages of television. in the 50s and 60s.
They were limited, but I didn't realize it was that limited. I think it was maybe five channels. Wow.
No, the three networks, that was it. And that's why, going back to Joy, she was on, she was very popular on television, and because she was always on one channel or another. I mean, she did all the sitcoms and, Maverick, all those shows, all TV dramas and comedies. So, but there were only three channels.
And I forgot who did the song, 700 Channels and Nothing's On. And that's, you know, I think it's because we had a commitment when we had just a certain amount of channels. You gave the show a chance. You didn't just say, like, now, and I have to say I do it too. I'll flip, nah, and I know I have another 600 to go, and I'll find something. But when you had just a few, you just committed to at least giving it a try, and if you didn't like it, okay. But you couldn't channel surf. So what?
No, you couldn't. I mean, that was it. And you had to, and I know this is difficult for you to believe, but you had to stand up and go to the television and turn the channel.
Imagine what a drama that was.
Yeah, no clickers.
We had to get off our chairs and actually touch the button. Oh, my God.
Yes, heaven forbid. Yeah, you had to do that. So a lot of people didn't change the channel very much because they didn't want to have to get off their butts.
They would just sit and watch until
that weird thing came on the screen. You know, the...
The test pattern.
Yeah, the test pattern. And
TV didn't go back on until 6. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was nothing after midnight. That was it.
Yeah. So, my God.
Thankfully, things are better, and we have more. Oh, I just thought of something, and I just wanted to make mention. Things are really going great with the book, and there's a wonderful producer and writer who, a screenwriter, and it's going to be a limited series. So things are rocking.
You could mention names if you can mention names. I sense hesitance in your voice, Alex.
The producer, the producer is Vincent DeSalvo, and Joe Doherty is the screenwriter, and it's very, very exciting. Joe did a wonderful series years ago called 30-something.
I remember. I used to love that.
And he's done a lot of stuff recently, so I'm very, very excited. So life is good, Laurie. Life is very good.
Amen. And on that note, as we always run out of time, we're about to get cut off. You will be back, and you'll be Ebert next week.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what I'm going to make you, unless I change my mind. And you and I will discuss whatever film we're going to choose against. Yeah, because I want a nice sharp contrast. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us. And we will be back next week, same time. And I will have the lovely Alexis Hunter on with me. And we're going to be finishing out Pride Month together. I leave you with a closing thought, favorite quote by Mother Teresa: if we don't know peace, it's because we've forgotten we belong to each other. Happy Pride Month, and happy Pride Month to you, my love.
Oh, thank you, Laurie. Thank you so much. It's a real treat to be on your show.
I'm loving it. I'm loving life with you.
Me too.
And we will be back next week. And everybody else, go out and make it a wonderful day and be kind and just be safe. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you.